Well, 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 welcome back to Joyride. I am Jared Brandon Flandy, and
I am Adam Mendenhall.
And this is the show where we talk about all things transportation and adventure. And we're back for another episode. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well as usual. And, you know, last week you got me really wondering about British cars again, Triumphs and MGs. And that reminds me of something, right? That's one of our sponsors, correct?
It is.
So let's talk about British Parts Northwest for just a second here. So, since 1982, British Parts Northwest has been your source for all your British car needs. They have knowledgeable staff who can help you find whatever you need to make sure your car is in the best condition possible. They carry quality parts brands such as Lucas, TRW, and Borg & Beck. British Parts Northwest is based out of the United States, but ships both domestically and internationally, and offers same-day shipping as well. You can place your order by phone by calling this number, 503-864-2001. That number again is 503-864-2001. You can also place your order online by going to bpnorthwest.com. Remember to spell out the word Northwest. British Parts is celebrating its 40th anniversary by teaming up with the Starstruck Podcast Network to bring you hit shows like Joyride. To claim 10% off on your next online purchase at bpnorthwest.com, use discount code Joyride. That's discount code Joyride. And we have one extra little shout out, don't we, Adam?
I believe we do.
And that is for Noah Norwood. He is the host of the Hot Rod Kid podcast. He brings in all sorts of guests, automotive enthusiasts as well as hot rod enthusiasts, and they have a very spirited chat about those things. Noah is also a professional automotive restorer, restoring such things as classic Mustangs as well as the old V8s from the Bonnie and Clyde era. And so we do recommend that podcast. That, once again, is the Hot Rod Kid podcast. Also, Adam, we have some new social media stuff that we have out online, right?
That's correct.
We have an Instagram page that is Podcast Joyride. And we have put that out there for everyone because, obviously, this is a podcast radio show. It's not quite as visual as some things. So if you're ever curious about what some of the things we talk about look like, you can find it there. Also, if you want to check out our parent company's website, which is starstruckcompany.com, which is where some of these podcast episodes are distributed. There's also interesting things there as well that me and Adam have worked on. So by all means, check it out. So with that said, Adam, are we ready to roll on to the main segment of our episode?
Let's do it.
Now, we are doing a scripted or a story episode here once again today. And the title of this is, excuse me, Hold My Beer. The Adventures of Pilot Thomas Fitzpatrick. Now, this is going to be a plain one. Are you ready for a plain one? We have not done too many aerospace things once. We have done the hot air balloon one, but this is, I think, one of our first airplane episodes, so I'm really excited for this.
I am as well. I'll be refreshing to spread our wings once again.
A nice little touch there on your pun. So, it has been said that if you put your mind to something, you can accomplish anything. Which I think is kind of a Doc Brown reference, but we'll keep rolling with that.
I think it is.
Great men throughout history have done great things. Some have built empires. Others have invented and conceived better ways of doing things. Some men, however, have left more unique legacies upon Earth. One of these gentlemen was an airplane pilot who hailed from the big town of New York City, and his story would prove to be as exciting as the city that never sleeps. Thomas Fitzpatrick was born on April 24th, 1930, in the Washington Heights neighborhood of Manhattan. Not much is known about his childhood, but his time as a child would come to an end when he enlisted with the Marines during World War II in 1945. When he enlisted, he lied about his age since he was only 15 years old. Now, did you have any relatives that were in World War II, Adam?
Yes. Yeah, matter of fact, I did. On my mother's side and my father's side, both, World War II. My grandfather, a couple of his brothers served in World War II, and also that would have been on my mother's side, her uncle served in World War II, along with her, well, she had a great uncle that served in World War I, but that's another story.
Right. I had the story that I was always told is one of my great uncles, he was drafted in his 40s when the war broke out. And so they sent him to boot camp. And, you know, when you're in your 40s, it's a little hard to break someone down and retrain them. So after he told the drill instructor to F off, after he told him to do push-ups, they sent him home. I like that's how it was. Just like back then, they didn't like court-martial him or put him in prison. This went, eh, this isn't going to work.
You know? No, untrainable. Move on.
So Thomas fought in the Pacific Theater War and with time was honorably discharged. Also during that period, he learned how to fly a reconnaissance airplane before he was discharged from the service. I'm assuming not like my great uncle.
No, I imagine not.
Okay. This experience would cause Thomas to have a long fascination with flying in airplanes. So I'm foreshadowing a bit here, okay?
Sounds like it.
He would return to the Northeast after the war, and among his friends, Thomas Fitzpatrick was known as Tommy Fitz. So I'm thinking of like those New York accents from The Irishman. You know, I'm sure that was...
It's one of those names.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Tommy would not endure civilian life for long, though, and he decided to enlist in the Army to fight in the Korean War in 1949. According to a report that was issued at one point during his time in Korea, Tommy rescued other American soldiers by driving an ammunition truck through the line of fire. He managed to save the soldiers, but was unfortunately also wounded when the event occurred. As a result, he was given a Purple Heart for his brave rescue effort.
Well, rightfully so. It's amazing he survived to receive that Purple Heart.
Yeah, you don't hear that every day.
That's a crazy story. Ammunition truck through the line of fire.
Which it had to have been flammable.
Yeah. Wow.
After his time in the Korean War, Tommy would return to civilian life for good. Despite not fighting in any more wars, his spirit and nature did not go away. According to his neighbor, Fred Hartling, who was also a brother of one of Tommy's friends, Hartling said, quote, "Tommy had a crazy side. The whole group of them, my brother's friends, were a wild bunch." Also foreshadowing. <okay. laughs> Tommy eventually would become a Union steam fitter, excuse me, but he decided to explore an old passion of his, flying. When not working as a steam fitter, Tommy would begin a new pastime by enrolling as a flight student at Teterboro Airport in New Jersey. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce that. He would also spend time at the airport working as a flight mechanic. With time, Tommy would earn his wings by officially becoming a licensed pilot. Now, you are an automotive mechanic, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Would that be too hard to switch over to aviation if you had a background in that?
You know, yes and no. The hardest part for most of the mechanics is having to do away with all pneumatic tools for the most part. Everything is hand tool only on the aviation side. And depending on how, I guess, organized you are when it comes to your tool drawer, if you are not an organized person, it's going to be a rough transition. You're probably not going to be able to cut it on the aviation side. Even back then, they really scrutinize people, and it's a. I would say if you're an exotic car mechanic, you'll do fine as an aviation mechanic. But anything less than that, it's much a rougher transition.
And now, for those who don't know, what is a pneumatic tool?
So that is an air-powered tool or tools that run off compressed air.
Okay, yep. Good to know. By being a person of Irish descent, Tommy also had another favorite pastime when he was not flying, and that was drinking heavily. Consequently, he was a regular patron of Joe's Bar on 191st Street in Manhattan. So, on the night of September 30th, 1956, it was during one of these drinking sessions at Joe's Bar that Tommy's name would go down in both fame and infamy. One of the patrons told Tommy that he could not travel between New Jersey and Manhattan in 15 minutes' time. Tommy did not take this lightly and made a bet that he could travel between New Jersey and Manhattan in that amount of time. Are you thinking he's going to do this by car?
No.
Well, he will partially, but just a second. Tommy got in his car in a highly inebriated state, drove to his flight school at Teterboro Airport. He entered a hangar and selected a Cessna 140 plane. Without clearance, he taxied the plane onto the runway and proceeded to take off into the wild blue yonder in the middle of the night.
Jeez. Violation after violation right out of the gates.
Tommy would fly from the airport in New Jersey, and in a matter of minutes, he was flying in New York City airspace. Now, landing an airplane is a difficult task for any pilot, even on the flattest of landing strips. For Tommy, however, he had to navigate through the treacherous terrain of New York City. According to later testimonies, Tommy intended to either land in a park or the football field of a high school, but the conditions were so dark, he concluded neither of these locations were ideal to make a safe landing. Where did Tommy end up landing, you might ask?
I can only imagine.
He dipped the nose of the plane downward and flew straight into the maze of the skyscrapers of Manhattan. Just like you did in Flight Simulator back in the day. Okay, but he's doing it for real. Okay. Miraculously, he managed to drop the plane lower towards the street, specifically on St. Nicholas Avenue near 191st Street. The wheels of the plane touched down upon the New York City pavement, and Tommy taxied the Cessna right next to Joe's Bar.
Oh, my God. That's a feat on so many levels. It's ridiculous.
He got out, went inside, and had a celebratory drink before last call at 3 a.m.
Oh, well, that just that tops off or adds to the legend, you might say, right there.
Oh, it gets worse. Don't worry. Later that morning, the New Yorkers of the area woke up to a strange sight, which was a small airplane sitting in the street.
that would lead to a few questions, yeah, to say the least.
A local youth at the time, Sam Garcia, was one of these perplexed New Yorkers who discovered the wayward plane. He said, quote, "I thought maybe they had trucked it in as a practical joke, because there was no way a man had landed in that narrow of a street."
Oh my God.
It would not take long for the police to also take notice. Tommy, not long after his flight, was questioned by the police, and he told them his plane was having engine troubles and that he was forced to land in the street. The police did not buy this, however, since they quickly realized Tommy was absolutely drunk when conveying this information.
Sure, buddy, that's what happened,
Tommy was arrested, and the plane was dismantled and stored at a local police station. It would not take long for the story to hit the newsstands. Tommy's daring flight was featured in local papers such as the New York Daily News and as far as the Register Guard in Eugene, Oregon.
Wow.
Which I did go on the Register Guard's website, and I did find in their archives that article. So, and this isn't like, you know, the internet back then. It took a little time for that information to travel a touch. You know?
Sure.
Yeah. The New York Times also took note of Tommy's endeavor by praising it as, quote, a feat of aeronautics. I love how he was just shit-faced when he did this, too. They're making him sound like it's something amazing, which it is, but it was done in such lightheartedness.
You know? Exactly.
Even Sergeant Harold Behrens of the Police Aviation Bureau said it was a, quote, 100,000-to-1 shot.
Wow.
On the day of Tommy's trial, however, Judge Edward J. Chapman was not as impressed. He set Tommy's bail at $5,000, which is about $45,000 today for inflation. Judge Chapman justified this by claiming, quote, as a deterrent to other foolish young men who get drunk and fly a plane. As like it's going to happen over and over again. The judge also said, quote, many terrible things could have happened. So Tommy was charged with the felony of grand larceny and violating a city municipal code, which actually stated you cannot land an airplane on a New York City street.
Oh, my God. They actually have a code.
They actually have a code, yeah. Eventually, Tommy was fined a grand total of $100. The larceny charge was dropped because the owner of the plane thought Tommy's actions were just plain too damn funny to charge him.
My God.
But his pilot's license was suspended for 6 months. So he got off on a slap on the wrist, essentially.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
With all the airplane excitement behind him, Tommy decided he did not want to fly anymore and never renewed his pilot's license ever again. Eventually, the sound of airplane engines would be replaced with wedding bells when Tommy married his new bride, Helen, in June of 1958. The couple would move to New Jersey, and Tommy continued to work as a steam fitter. With such an idyllic life, it appeared that the World War II soldier, Korean War hero, and airplane landing extraordinaire had finally settled down. As nice as his life was in New Jersey, Tommy was getting homesick for his old neighborhood. On October 4th, 1958, Tommy decided to return to his stomping grounds in Manhattan for a little sentimental journey. With his reminiscing coming to a close, where do you think his journey would end before he went home?
Oh, I'm guessing Joe's Bar, maybe.
You would be correct. He ended up at Joe's Bar.
All roads lead to Joe's, right?
Many old bar patrons were happy to see Tommy Fitz belly up to the bar once again. The evening had been filled with much merrymaking, but soon the story of Tommy's airplane exploit became the main topic of discussion. One barfly, who was there on the night of October 4th, did not believe the story and claimed Tommy was a liar. Naturally, Tommy did not take this accusation kindly. What did he do next? Do you think he just walked home and just said F you?
I don't think so.
Tommy disappeared from the bar, got into his car, and in an inebriated state, drove to Teterboro Airport, New Jersey. Despite the fact that Tommy had vowed never to fly again, he broke into a hangar. This time liberated a red and white Cessna 120. The control tower later noticed the little airplane taxi onto the runway. The propeller began to spin faster, and Tommy was off once again without any lights or proper clearance.
Oh.
The control tower helplessly watched the little Cessna take off in a frenzied manner and disappear into the Onyx sky.
Wow.
Within minutes, Tommy saw the bright skyline of the Manhattan's skyline in front of him. As he approached the city, he descended and began to maneuver through the towering buildings of New York City once again. Around 12:30 a.m., bus driver Harvey Roth was parked on 187th Street when an airplane blasted its way over him, barely missing the roof of the bus.
Jeez!
The bus driver naturally dived to the floor out of panic when the airplane came from out of nowhere.
Oh, I can't even imagine what he was thinking, going, what?
I knew it was a Cold War era, too.
Yeah, that too.
He plucked up a little courage, looked over the dashboard, and proceeded to watch the Cessna bounce up and down 20 feet in the air like a basketball with billows of smoke coming from the tires every time it attempted to make contact with the road. The tires eventually would make full contact with the road, and Tommy made a solid landing. He throttled down and brought the plane to a complete stop. A confused Harvey Roth was so worried that his superiors would not believe him, and he later told a reporter, quote, "What the hell could you say if you ever were pulled into a safety meeting hearing for having an accident with an airplane?"
No kidding.
This time, Tommy did not celebrate his accomplishment by having a beer, but instead fled the scene immediately. Another witness of Tommy's second stunt was a carpenter named John Johnson. He was driving his car when he had to make an emergency stop in order to avoid Tommy when he was landing. He stated, quote, "I slammed on my brakes and a plane skidded over the top of my car and made a perfect landing ahead of me. I saw a tall, blonde, and husky man wearing a gray suit get out and run towards St. Nicholas Avenue on 187th Street.
And I'm sure what followed that is he had to say something along the lines of, I'm not crazy. Please believe me.
Yeah, I'm sure. I've not been drinking all the above. Yeah. Unlike the other guy. But when the police inspected the airplane, they were surprised to discover it was free of damage and that the fuel tank was also 3/4 of the way full. So he flew it very economically, even though he was inebriated.
Wow.
It did not take long for the police to suspicion who the suspect was, since there was only one man in all of New York City who had such prodigious flying skills to achieve such a feat. They quickly concluded it was Mr. Thomas Fitzpatrick.
Of course. Number one suspect.
Consequently, Tommy was brought in for questioning. He initially denied the exploit, but had no other choice but to confess after the multiple accounts of the various witnesses. His troubles began to worsen when he admitted that not only did he land a plane in the streets of Manhattan again, but he also had to admit that he did it without a pilot's license this time, since he did not renew it after his last adventure. Now, I like this one. And this is, some people say this happened, some people say it didn't. I hope it did. Another version of the story states that instead Tommy turned himself in to the nearest police station and said, "Well, I hear you've been looking for me." For the second time in his life, Tommy was back in court. He was charged with grand larceny again, but Tommy would not be as lucky as he was last time. Judge Mullen was not as patient as Judge Chapman had been. Mullen stated, quote, "The last time you paid a $100 fine. If you had been seriously and properly jolted the first time, it's possible this would not have occurred a second time, and maybe you wouldn't be standing here today. This is in no doubt, in my mind, you were intoxicated and were in a measure dared by a drinking companion when you were in this silly, semi-intoxicated condition."
Semi-intoxicated.
He's not wrong, but I love how it's almost so pompous. It's funny.
It is.
Mullen was aware of Tommy's impressive military record and did take it into consideration when he gave Tommy his sentence. Mullen was appreciative of Tommy's efforts that earned him his Purple Heart and the fact he was a law-abiding citizen despite his passion for stealing and landing airplanes in the middle of the street. In the end, Tommy was charged, among other things, with grand larceny and was sentenced to 6 months in jail. When the judge asked Tommy why he had committed such a dangerous act for a second time, Tommy replied, quote, "It's the lousy drink." At least he's honest.
Yeah, at least he's that.
Tommy would serve his 6 months in jail, and after he was released, he would finally accept a quiet life in Washington Township in Bergen County, New Jersey. In time, he and Helen would have 3 children together. Tommy continued to work as a steam fitter for the next 51 years. He was an active member of his community. He belonged to a men's group at his church and was a member of the local VFW post and was involved with various civic organizations in the community. Alas, Thomas Fitzpatrick's daring adventures and charitable causes would come to an end when he died after a long battle of cancer on September 14th, 2009, at the age of 79. So if you're wondering, by the time of his second flight, Tommy was only 28.
Wow, yeah, that's that's going back.
In honor of Thomas Fitzpatrick, a drink has been named after him. The ingredients are Kahlua, vodka, Chambord, blackberries, egg white, and simple syrup. The drink is called a late night flight.
How appropriate.
How can you sum up the life of a man like Thomas Fitzpatrick? It's obvious that he had an unquenchable thirst for life, as well as a little beer at times. In war, he proved his bravery, and in the bar, he proved both his foolish pride as well as his unbridled determination. One thing is crystal clear about Mr. Thomas Fitzpatrick, however. Tommy Fitz loved a joyride, and one was never enough.
No, it wasn't.
And that is the end of our story.
And what an entertaining one that was. Alcohol and planes. I mean, it almost gives you a Mad Men feel of, you know, pilots back in the day. But that was,
yeah,
that was an extreme.
No, I loved, you know, all the research you did, that he was never charged with drunk flying, as far as I'm aware of. Because we talked about it in one of our episodes, how just drunk driving really wasn't enforced either. It just didn't really seem to be at the radar, you know, in the 1950s at the time.
No, no.
Yep. Well, before we wrap up here, Adam, do you have any last-minute comments or thoughts?
You know, I think that's, you know, a unique tale, especially. You don't hear too many successful flights that involve landing around skyscrapers, especially in the city. So what a refreshing tale of uniqueness.
Well, with that said, everyone, please, if you can, give us some good likes on whatever your podcast app is. And reviews are great, preferably nice ones. Those help our show get out there. Also, like we were saying, definitely check out our internet pages, including our Instagram page, Podcast Joyride, as well as our parent company's website, starstrekcompany.com, where there's all sorts of interesting projects we're working on there as well. So with that said, that is it for now, but we will catch you on our next episode of Joyride. Does that work for you, Adam?
It does for me. Until next time.
Okay, until next time. Signing out.